From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Let's put the days of slick politicians and rich elites who don't understand our problems behind us. My story has made me the conservative that I am today.
Those Trump people, if they lose, they're the biggest crybabies and whiners that the system is rigged. But if the system is rigged in their favor, then they shut up and they're quiet.
The names that are being mentioned, Mr. Griffin and others, you guys are smart. You've worked hard for your money. You've got common sense. And I know you know all about taking risks. And I'm here to tell you that I'm a farmer. I won't give up. I'm a hard worker. I have common sense. I've been the only one standing up for the state of Illinois and the people thereof. And our friends in Chicago are realizing the same thing. So I hope you don't waste your money and you put it to good work. And that would only obviously be behind me. So how's that for a sales pitch? Because I know you're watching. So.
Well, that is Darren Bailey. He is a Republican candidate for governor. We are months away from the primary, but the 2022 race for governor is starting to heat up. There's even speculation another Republican will enter the field with financial backing from billionaire Ken Griffin. Bailey was alluding to that. Bailey had a big week as well. He also announced a running mate, Stephanie Trussell. We heard from her at the start of the show. We'll discuss where things stand in the race for governor. And after years of talk, it looks like the state office building known as the Thompson Center in Chicago will have a new owner, and it looks like a new future. That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, emeritus professor, former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. Hannah Meisel is NPR Illinois State House editor, and joining us this week, we have Mark Maxwell, Capitol Bureau Chief for WCIA-TV. Mark is traveling north somewhere along I-55, but he's agreed to join us. And Mark, it's always good to have you on with us.
Sean, it's great to be with you again. Thanks for having me.
Well, there is a lot of speculation that an Illinois mayor may join the race for governor as a Republican. That's getting a lot of attention this week. Hannah, who is this person, and what could it mean for the already announced field?
Well, Aurora Mayor Richard Irvin is, a unique candidate, and obviously Illinois is a unique place, and a very challenging place for Republicans. He is a Black mayor, and he also, credit to Mark, Mark went and dug up Mayor Irvin's voting record in the past several primaries, and he's mostly pulled Democratic ballots. But, this is reportedly someone that the kind of Republican dream team, the ones who got Bruce Rauner elected, of course, to office in 2014, and, were on the Mark Kirk team and, had years of kind of innovating in Illinois Republican politics before that, when they were fighting against ex-governor Rod Blagojevich. So, these folks are allegedly the ones who are, have been trying to recruit him. And there's an effort to actually get a winning slate of Republicans, because other than Bruce Rauner, and it's been a real dearth, obviously, for Republicans in the last several years. Yeah, but I think Mark can speak more to that, where things are at.
Yeah, Mark, go ahead.
Well, Richard Irvin checks a lot of boxes to win in a general election. A lot of establishment Republicans see the mayor of Illinois' second largest city in Aurora as someone who has a big political base in the exact spot they need one, in the suburbs. The question is, can Richard Irvin ignite downstate? There are signs, if you look for them, that the Republican electorate might back a person like Richard Irvin. If you look at the last election, all of the Republicans to win House races across the country, new incumbents that turned blue seats red, they were either military veterans — Richard Irvin checks that box, he fought in Desert Storm — people of color, he checks that box, or they were women. Now, he doesn't check that one, but if you look for Republicans and reasons that they vote for people and vote for new people to come to the halls of power somewhere, that's a sign that the electorate might be leaning in his direction. Hannah mentioned his voting record, that the only time he pulled a Republican ballot in the last three significant statewide races was actually in 2018, when he was presumably voting for Bruce Rauner over Jeannie Ives. So he could possibly make the case to voters that he's exactly that independent-minded Democrat that Jim Edgar talked about, who would cross party lines to do good. And in a blue state, he could present himself as that moderate centrist who could kind of negotiate with both parties. The problem, of course, is he's going to have to go through the primary gauntlet and be beaten up and tested and questioned about his conservative credentials and whether or not he's the kind of person who can really ignite the far right base. And Darren Bailey is already going to make the case that he doesn't fit the bill to be a real Republican.
Yeah, Charlie, your thoughts on that? We don't know a lot about Irvin. I'm assuming you don't know a whole lot about him yet either. But if this person is put on the ballot and has financial backing from Ken Griffin to kind of go toe-to-toe dollar-wise with J.B. Pritzker, is there a real possibility for maybe an upset here?
Well, yeah, there's always a possibility of an upset. But I think I would underscore what Mark said. Before he can take on J.B. Pritzker, whoever Ken Griffin's anointed lackey is going to be, he's got to get through the Republican primary. And as things stand now, despite the fact that Mayor Irvin would be popular in the suburbs, that's not where the heart of the Republican Party vote is. And the Republican Party is no longer the Republican Party of Jim Edgar or Jim Thompson. And now, Darren Bailey is more representative. Now, I would say, as things stand now, Urban's best shot would be if Bailey, Sullivan, Rabin, Schimpf, if they all stay in the race, you have four people whose conservative credentials can go unchallenged, dividing up the hardcore right-wing vote, and allow Urban to come through with maybe 25% of the overall vote. That's probably, as things stand now, in my judgment, that would be his best shot to keep everybody else in there, have them split up the vote, and then he can appeal to whatever extent there are any moderates left within the Republican primary voting base.
Hannah, we heard at the beginning of the running mate that's already been announced by Darren Bailey, his running mate, Stephanie Trussell. I don't know that that's a name that, again, from a downstate perspective, is that well known, but who is she and what would she bring to this ticket?
I tried to go looking for more details on, who Stephanie Trussell is. And, there's not a ton out her there. Either she doesn't have a LinkedIn account or it was deleted at some point. Not a lot of other social media. Obviously, she does have that Twitter account that Mark and others were able to go look back on and see some tweets and other times that she had made comments, especially about Trump in 2016, saying that she was disgusted with him. And of course, she had to backtrack that. But in 2012, she won a contest to kind of become the next kind of radio talk show host, and she got a talk show at WLS in Chicago, where she was for about 7 years until 2019, hosting a conservative show on, I believe, Sundays. I think Darren Bailey, obviously, people pick running mates for reasons to kind of, as Mark said, check boxes that, they might not fulfill themselves, especially the ones that you could, possibly gain crossover votes. Now, a running mate, is that going to necessarily make the, difference? Probably not. There are examples in history, most notably Sarah Palin. Some say she sank John McCain's campaign in 2008. Others say, the tide was against him anyway. With Barack Obama being, kind of the wunderkind that he was at the time. Darren Bailey has said, for a couple of months, he's said it in a couple of forums, he's, you know, the wording's kind of odd, but he said, you know, I want someone to look, you know, be my ambassador to Chicago. You know, this is Mayor Ryan, people. This is the same guy who wanted, you know, Chicago out of Illinois, you know, just a couple of years ago. That was his whole shtick, was, you know, removing the rest of Illinois from Chicago, where, you know, in his mind, all of the ills of the state come from, but really, in reality, you know, there's been a lot of political science research, especially from Paul Simon Institute at SIU, showing that it's, you know, downstate it gets net benefit from, you know, the taxpayers in Chicago, kind of, and I hate to use those words because it sounds so, you know, it sounds dismissive, but, you know, in essence, subsidizing the state as more and more people move to urban and suburban areas and leave rural areas behind, not just in Illinois, but everywhere.
Yeah, Mark, let me go back to what Charlie was saying. I think he made a good point that the heart of the Republican Party right now appears to be more conservative and certainly more downstate. To me, Darren Bailey has a real strong possibility of winning the nomination next year. Does Stephanie Trussell, from what you've been able to find out, does she seem to help his chances or possibly even hurt them?
Possible that I have a state house centric bias here, but I'm going to strongly challenge that assertion that Darren Bailey speaks for the entire Republican Party. I actually don't think that's true. The voters I talked to, look, if you count the Republicans in Springfield, he and his little gang of far right members account for like 10% of all of the elected Republicans, and almost none of them have actually won competitive elections. They've basically coasted to election because nobody challenged them, and they were the only ones talking. This is very, very early in the Republican primary. Darren Bailey has chewed up a lot of bandwidth. He's been the loudest candidate in the race, and he has successfully energized a base of people who really don't like the pandemic. Who among us does? He represents the anger against the COVID protocols, and that's a smart strategy to ignite a base. The question is about electability. Most of the establishment Republicans that have actually won elected competitive elections in Illinois can't stand Darren Bailey. They're afraid of challenging him in public when they don't need to, but they are the ones that have been quietly looking, scouring, scanning the landscape for any champion who can beat Bailey and beat Pritzker. So I don't agree that Darren Bailey speaks for the majority of the Republican Party. I just think he's the only person talking right now. So he's the only person we're hearing from. That has always been the challenge, that until some other Republican steps up and starts taking the lead on defining the issues and setting the agenda, it will have that appearance that Bailey is, you know, speaking for the GOP, but he is not well liked in Republican Party circles. Not even close.
Mark, he's going to have another person now speaking on his behalf in Stephanie Trussell. So, you know, what are your thoughts with her?
Well, I don't know that she'll be speaking on his behalf. When I visited the two and I'm just making a sort of a tongue-in-cheek comment here, but when I visited their two campaigns' stump speeches, she was reading a script that was handed to her by the Bailey campaign. And it was awkward because her first introduction to voters in Bloomington and Springfield was a non-apology apology for roasting Donald Trump when he was running for office. She's a far-right Tea Party activist who got that radio show gig, and she was actively campaigning against Donald Trump for Ted Cruz. She said in her stump speech this week, she said, "I'm not going to apologize to Democrats and the left-wing media for comments I made on my social media." Well, again, it was elected Republicans who brought those comments to light and who said, "Hey, someone should ask them about this." She was against Trump. In fact, she said, "If I ever come around to support this guy and say I'm on Team Trump, that would be," in her words, quote, "so robotic and so fake." At her stump speech in Springfield, she said, "I came around to be the conductor on the crazy train on Team Trump." That was her word. So it took her a while, but she came around and she fully embraced Trump. Why is that important? Because as Governor Jim Edgar told me, loyalty to Trump could be the one thing, all you need. If you're the most loyal Trump candidate, that alone could help you win the primary. That same ingredient could sink you in the general election in a state that Trump never came close to winning in both attempts.
Yeah, Charlie, you've watched more governor's races than all of us. You know, your thoughts on all of this, where things, and it's been a lot of action here just in the last week or so, at least a lot of discussion on it. What do you think of where things stand right now?
Well, I would go back to something Mark said in terms of checking boxes. If you look at Stephanie Trussell, she checks all three boxes that he mentioned. She's from the suburbs. She's a woman, and she's also Black. And the fact that she was late on the Trump bandwagon, I don't get the sense that that is something that is so significant as how ardent she would be now for Trump. Look at all the national figures who were saying, oh my God, Donald Trump, never, never. And now they lined up to basically kiss his mistletoe, as the first Mayor Daley would say. And so I think the sentiment, my sentiment, and I don't get out that much as I used to, obviously, particularly with the pandemic, I basically don't go anywhere. The Republican Party has changed Illinois from the days when I was an active reporter. It's a lot more conservative, and it's a lot more at the grassroots level. It seems to be a lot more personality driven towards Donald Trump. And I think Mark is correct. The big issue for these people is they don't like the pandemic. They don't like being told what to do. They don't want to wear a mask. That's interfering with their freedom. And I've said many times before, this strikes me as being totally irrational. Get the vaccine, wear the mask, protect yourself. And if you don't care about yourself, protect the people who can't be vaccinated for whatever reason, protect little kids for whom there's no vaccine been approved yet. So I just don't get where they're coming from, but that doesn't mean that they're not out there and they're not uniting around people who are going to be, if you will, patriots and freedom fighters standing up to government overreach. And I think Bailey has tapped into this vein, as Mark said, and that's what's driving his success so far.
And meanwhile, on the other side, go ahead, Mark, were you trying to say something?
Hey, just one quick note. We look for polling all the time in politics. Do you want a concrete poll? 4 in 5 voting age Illinoisans have been vaccinated. You have to question the strategy that targets the 1 in 5 to try to win an election.
When it's broken down by people who are Republicans versus people who are Democrats, I think Republicans, I don't recall the figures, but I'm not sure the majority of Republicans are in favor of vaccinations from what I've seen. You can correct me if I'm wrong, though.
They are. In fact, they're the majority of Republicans are even in favor of vaccine mandates for teachers or for soldiers in certain instances. Maybe not in all cases for mandates for everyone, but even on a partisan split, there is still majority support for vaccines and vaccine mandates in certain cases.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, Hannah, let me go to you because J.B. Pritzker has always said since day one of the pandemic, we're going to follow the science. He has put himself in that corner. He's not apologized for vaccine mandates or anything of that nature. And now his name getting floated a little bit, at least in some Democratic circles, as a possibility if Joe Biden decides not to run for another term. I know the governor, and this is a lot of speculation, too. But I've always thought to myself, I can't imagine why J.B. Pritzker would spend all of this money to be governor of Illinois if he didn't have even the possibility of some future political office that's higher than that. So I don't know if that should come as a shock at this point.
Yeah, and this is also not the first time that, you know, his possible ambitions have come up and, you know, he's been asked about it and, you know, his name has been floated. You know, this week, the New York Times, his name came up in a New York Times story about, you know, who might possibly be tapped on the shoulder or, you know, might want to throw their hat in the ring if, like you said, Joe Biden wouldn't want to run again in 24. The governor, like, what is he supposed to say? It would not be in good, it would be in very poor posture to be like, yeah, I'm thinking about running and then only serving as governor for 2 years and being checked out because I want to run for president. Like, obviously, he's going to say no. But, you know, he was asked about it over and over and over again at a Chicago press conference the other day. And I mean, by the end, I think everyone was annoyed. He's not like always on cable news being a talking head. That's really not, you know, something he's done hardly at all. You know, it, you know, he's trying to build this, you know, kind of CV, as it were, with a bunch of, you know, legislative wins. The, you know, next year's gubernatorial election cycle could be like a weather balloon.
I guess, and this is going to be critical of the people, the reporters at the Chicago press conference, it's a lot easier to ask the governor, are you running for president, than it is to try and engage him in serious public policy issues that require some understanding of what the problem is and what the possible solutions are. So that's my dig at the TV guys up in Chicago. But I would also note that any governor of a large populous state is automatically going to be considered as a potential presidential prospect. Dan Walker was seen after he upset Mayor Daley's choice, Paul Simon in the Democratic primary, and then he beat the incumbent governor, Richard Ogilvie, in the general election. He was seen as, oh, maybe this guy can be a presidential candidate. Jim Thompson was routinely seen as a presidential candidate. This young, energetic, charismatic prosecutor. Now he's governor of the fifth largest state in the union. Will he run for governor, or I mean for president? Rod Blagojevich famously wanted to be president, and there was probably no one more disappointed than Rod Blagojevich when Barack Obama actually got the nomination and was elected president. So it kind of goes with the territory. If you're elected governor, say in, I don't know, not to pick on any particular state, but South Dakota, chances are you're not going to be seen as presidential material. But if you're in New York, if you're in California, if you're in Florida, Texas, that's always part of the political equation.
Just a couple of minutes here. I do want to get in the fact that there was a big announcement this week in Chicago. And Hannah, you followed this, the Thompson Center, which we have heard about this for years and years and years about what the state is going to do with that building. Now we have at least some insight into what the plan is. Fill us in on what's happening with that.
That's right. You know, speaking of Rod Blagojevich, he was back in 2003, so almost two decades ago, you know, he floated selling the Thompson Center to balance Illinois' budget. And then, you know, Bruce Rauner came along and he also floated, not just floated, he assumed the profit of, you know, selling the Thompson Center in his proposed budgets multiple times. But this week, you know, the Pritzker administration announced that the state would sell it for $70 million and buy back 30% of its office space, because I mean, it is a prime location. You don't necessarily want to lose that downtown. But yeah, I mean, this is it's been such such a perfect metaphor, of course, for state government. Those who want to kick it a little bit, kick the tires and say, you know, we have some real problems. And this is kind of an equal opportunity thing on both sides of the aisle. It is a rundown, dilapidated building, you know, 1980s era, you know, after it opened in 1985, just kind of was really not maintained because it was just so expensive and so architecturally adventurous, shall we say. You know, it was very expensive to maintain. And of course it fell apart. I mean, you know, another dimension of this is it was later renamed after Jim Thompson, obviously Illinois' longest serving governor. And so there's, you know, it kind of harkens back to the era of when things worked, but obviously the building did not work. Like every time you went into the bathroom, you know, at least in the later years that I've started going there more regularly to work, I think you might get tetanus. Possibly. It's a very unpleasant place. And so it's going to be sold to a developer, as I said, for $70 million. Obviously, things are not final yet. Prime Group is the name of the developer. And Mike Rushke, its chair, says that they're going to spend about 2 years doing a total gut rehab and turn it into mixed use, you know, kind of hotel space, office space, retail. And, you know, it saves it from being demolished.
All right, let's go to our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Earlier this week, Governor Pritzker signed legislation to allow for the certification of professional midwives in Illinois, and this will be effective next October 1st. And we outlawed midwives, oh gosh, decades ago, unless they were licensed as nurses or doctors. But now, under this new law, they will have a path toward certification, and they'll be able to attend home births, out-of-hospital births, and finally passed the medical society, lifted its opposition after the law was, or the bill was structured to protect doctors and medical facilities from liability. And in the case of pregnant women of color, it's especially important because the statistics show that infant mortality and mom mortality is much greater with those groups, and that having their babies at home attended by a midwife is a way to cut down on those mortality rates.
Okay. Mark?
I was going to use a note from the field to highlight the Illinois Education Association, the teachers union, raising the alarm about increased violence in schools. If I can just add a note to the field from the conversation about Governor Pritzker's presidential ambitions quickly. What did we know about Pritzker before he became governor? One of his longest standing political allies was Nancy Pelosi. His chief of staff now was running a super PAC for Hillary Clinton. He was one of Hillary Clinton's biggest donors and wanted to be in her cabinet should she win. He didn't try to run for governor until after she lost. And I do think his chief of staff now was very close in the Senate, with Senate Democrats. He has a lot of ties to D.C. politics. I wouldn't be surprised if his heart was always leaning in that direction, but now he's got the mantle of a governor around him as well. Interesting. It doesn't tell us much about where his ambition is today, but it tells us where it used to be.
Good point. And Hannah.
As we all remember, in July 2020, Commonwealth Edison signed a $200 million deferred prosecution agreement where they basically said, yeah, for 9 years, we engaged in a bribery scheme to try to curry favor with public official A, who we all know is ex-House Speaker Mike Madigan. And part of the big energy and climate change law that lawmakers passed this summer involved having the Illinois Commerce Commission kind of oversee an audit and, you know, kind of come up with a number for ComEd to pay restitution for ratepayers, for its 4 million ratepayers in Illinois. Late Thursday night, ComEd said, hey, we're going to just preemptively voluntarily pay $21 million to ratepayers. And it's still unclear. I contacted ComEd last night and still have not heard back, but it's unclear what this money is.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week, and our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Mark Maxwell with WCIA-TV. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org through the NPR One app or iTunes, and join us next time for State Week. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.